This is Free America broadcasting on the Rod Echols Show with a message to all patriots trapped behind the lines in California, New York, Boston, and Chicago. Don't give up, true lovers of America. Even as we speak, moves are being made to drive the invaders back to the land from which they came. Defeat the would-be dictators and lift the chains of tyranny from around your neck. Stay strong. Stay brave. You're not forgotten, and you're not alone. Until next time, patriots, this is Free America signing out.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Zinc Media. Feel the power of knowledge.
And ecclesiastites all around the globe. It is I, your lovable host, Elrod, coming to you live from the Bunker Eye Studio this Tuesday morning, this Tuesday, it's September number 18 in the year of our Lord 2018, from the great granite state of New Hampshire, is soon to be a center of political activity, as we are every 4 years. I don't know why it's New Hampshire and Iowa. I don't get. I mean, we're too population-wise, we're two small states. But for whatever reason, we are considered to be rather important in the political process in the run up to the presidential election. And believe it, we're just about 2 years away from it, folks. I know it's gone by that fast. It just seems like we just had these people around here. And we did. You know, it was only 2 years ago. So we're getting to be close to the halfway mark on the Trump administration, just a couple of months away from that. And the Democrats are just beside themselves. Well, yeah, we're going to get into that today. Trump could set off a political nuclear bomb. It could be just an opening salvo. You know, one thing that people have to understand is that, again, Democrats underestimate Donald Trump because they're still trying to deal with him in a political way. Donald Trump doesn't play politics, and they don't know anything else. The swamp doesn't know anything else but to be political. I mean, all they are is, I'm sure that if you, look, I've never hung out down there. I mean, I've been to D.C. a couple of times as a kid, and visited. But I've never hung out down there with the political elite and the political second class. When I mean the second class, all the... you know, the underlings that are trying to get to the upper class. I never hung out with any of them. But I bet you, if I was a betting man, I'd bet you a nickel. I bet you that it's all it is politics. You go to a party, it's politics. You go out to dinner, it's politics. You just stop at the bar for a beer, it's politics. It's only natural because it is our nation's capital and is probably the most powerful city in the entire planet. But that's all that's going on. So when all you do is talk politics, when somebody comes along that is not political and doesn't play the political games, you don't know what to do. Now, and you don't know what to do because that's not how you're trained. You're not trained to deal with people in a non-political fashion. Because let's face it, most of these people down there, you know, they whether or not they actually become a lawyer, they go and get a law degree, or they study political science in college, or some other political-related expertise. And I use that term loosely. While in college. And then they seek to get internships and low-level jobs and all that kind of stuff, and they stay there. None of that teaches them, you know, the younger ones, how to deal with people in a non-political manner. It's just amazing. You ask them a simple yes or no question, and they'll give you a full 5-minute diatribe. And frankly, this is why I would look, I learned the last time that the politicians came through this state. And I was with an on-the-air radio station. And, they brought in a few during the presidential primaries. You know, we got to talk to, I got to interview a few of the shall we say, lesser candidates and a few statewide candidates on the air. And there was one gentleman that, again, they don't know how to deal with you if you are not political. And I had one guy that was, it had to do with education. And I started hammering him. Now, there were four of us sitting at the broadcast table. It was something called the Right Group. And there were four of us sitting at the table. The interview quickly became me and him. His handler had to save him, because he was giving me a bunch of political answer bullshit, and I wasn't going for it. The other three co-hosts were silent and in awe. And when his handler finally saved him, they said, "Wow, we thought you two were going to actually get up and start fist fighting." Well, I would have myrtleized him, but that was not the point. The point is, I learned right then and there that there's no way in hell I could ever be a reporter in the political realm. Look, you know, I did take law classes. I did go to, you know, business law and criminal justice and started down the track to be a lawyer. So I fully understand that when you're in court, if you're asked a simple yes or no question, that's what the lawyer and the judge is going to expect from you. So if a lawyer asks you a simple yes or no question and you start off on a 5-minute diatribe, they'll ask you the question again and they'll add yes or no. Now, it may not be a full answer, but the point is that if you're being asked a specific pointed question and all you're looking for is a yes or no answer, then that's the only answer you're going to be able to give. Politicians never want to give it. Now, I understand that sometimes an answer cannot be simplified to yes or no. And sometimes I understand that you have to explain your yes or no. But many times the questions are pretty damn simple. You know, let me give you an example. Did you, congressman, rape that woman and pay her off? Well, it's simple, yes or no. Well, you see, what happened is, and then they start going off into some 5-minute diatribe. Well, see, that's something I wouldn't accept. I'm sorry, you misunderstood the question. Let me repeat, or let me rephrase. And that's what I did to that poor guy who was expecting nothing but political, you know, lovey-doveyness. When they expect to be handled politically, and that's all they know how to do, and then somebody comes along who's not political, like Donald Trump, they don't know what to do. So they go off the rails because they try every political tactic that they have learned in their experience of being in D.C. or maybe in a state capitol, and if none of that works, they go off the rails. They don't know what to do. And then they start ending up looking like crazed lunatics. Now, I got some stuff here on Maxine Waters. Speaking of crazed lunatics, we'll get into her a little bit later. It's just this, all this stuff down there is absolutely, it is incredible to watch and to see what's going on. Now, I don't like it, but it is incredible to watch, and it is incredible to watch other people go off the rails. I, you know, if there's one thing you can say about Donald Trump has given voice to the nut jobs out there, all of them. I don't care which side of the political aisle. Now, most of them, the majority of them are on the left, but there are some on the right, too. But he's given voice to all the nut jobs, and they're all screaming their nut jobbery. I have never. Now, I have always been, you know, as an adult, even in high school, I've always been interested in business and politics and our nation's history. And from what I've learned from before my time, through my time on this planet, I have never experienced anything like this. Nothing. Now, granted, obviously, we know none of us were alive at 1776 or 1787 or 1800, you know, when the bulk of the stuff happened to form our country. I mean, it could have been just as raucous back then, I suppose. But I don't get that. I've often said this before, by the way. You know, people always talk about, you know, being Gentile in politics and being civilized. Let me tell you something. Our founders were nothing like these people try to be in Washington today. If you ever watched British politics, those people are brutal. You know, we get a bunch of our politicians talk about being, you know, having a common discord and being calm and being measured and being steady, you know, and being civilized. As if that's the way the rest of the world works. It doesn't. Just look at the Brits, man. Their politics are brutal. I mean, even the prime minister isn't sitting up or standing up on a pedestal somewhere. He's down in that, I call it the British pit. He's down in that British pit in Parliament with all the rest of them. And whenever the prime minister is, and he's not even at the head or even in the middle, you know, he's off to the side somewhere, or she, you know, and this is where they always stand or where they always sit. And the prime minister will rise to give his speech or her speech. And let me talk about interrupting. I mean, we Americans thought it was bad when I can't remember the representative's name, when Barack Obama gave his State of the Union address and said, "You lie!" And everybody went, "Oh, you don't do that. That's not the way politics is done. You know, the world thinks we're great." I'm like, are you kidding me? Have you ever listened to British parliamentary procedures? The prime minister could have a simple, you know, 5 or 10 minute speech and it'll last a half hour because that's how often he gets interrupted. It's brutal. But here we have just watching a few episodes of their, you know, their live shots or broadcasts or rebroadcasts of British Parliament, at least you know who is what. You don't have to worry about, you know, some stealth figure usually. That's the way it seems. Here you have no idea what these people are thinking or doing because everybody's so calm and civilized. And they all have a smile on their face. This is why I call Chuck Schumer the evil elf, because the man is just, I mean, he's the epitome of the swamp. He's the epitome of a swamp monster. I mean, he will calmly look you in the eye and lie to you. Now, normally, you know, we have all these psychological people that tell us, you know, about human behavior. And that when somebody lies to you, they do one of two things. Either they look all over the place because they can't look you in the eye, or they overly focus directly on the eye, and they don't blink because they really want you to believe their lie. So for most human beings, that seems to be the process when we tell a lie. I mean, one of the tricks is they don't look at you directly when they're talking. Or they will not take their gaze off of you and blink very little if they are looking you in the eye. Because they're trying to pull one over on you and they want to see if you're actually believing them. Chuck Schumer, on the other hand, now this must be a learned and practiced behavior, because Chuck Schumer will look you calmly in the eye. He will blink normally. He will divert his gaze normally. Like when you talk to somebody and you look him in the eye, your eyes often dart someplace else and back to their eyes, because that's human communication. It's the way we do it. It's a comfortable way of doing it. Well, that's how Chuck Schumer does it. And then he'll tell you the lie in a very calm, reassuring voice. And then he'll get that grin. Now, see, the problem is not only does he do that, but he expects you to believe the lie. But see, he knows, now follow me on this, Chuck Schumer knows that you know that Chuck is lying. But Chuck will add that grin at the end and expect you to believe the lie and not challenge him anyway. Now, that's an evil person. Because that grin is, yeah, I lied to you, and I know that you know I lied to you, but you're going to believe it anyway. That's it. I don't know many people who can do that. But that's the kind of politician that we have. You can't get a straight answer out of them. You can't get them to actually play fair and do what's best for their constituents. They always think that there's a game afoot and they've got to play. They've got to, you know, it's like chess. They always believe that they have to be two or three moves ahead of you on the political chessboard. Nobody can ever be straightforward. So everybody's trying to outmaneuver everybody else. And everybody's doing it behind the scenes, and they're in front of their face. You know, we're all friends, right? Ha 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 ha! And they got double knives, you know, ready to stab you in the back as soon as you turn your head from them. Because this is the way everybody does it down there. And Donald Trump comes along like a big bombastic, you know, blowhard, plops himself down right in the middle in the heart of D.C. and disrupts everything. And they try their old tactics. They try their indirect political tactics. They try their direct political tactics. They try their lying tactics. You don't even know when they're telling you the truth anymore. You really don't. That's how bad it is. They lie so much, you don't even know when they're telling the truth. And Donald Trump comes in and explodes everything, and all they have is a bunch of political weapons. But Donald Trump doesn't play politics. So it's like he's got this political force field around him. Everything that they toss at him, his numbers keep rising and rising and rising. And I know that in September, everybody's talking about, well, they took a hit because of the death of McCain. Really? Look, most of the people that support Donald Trump didn't like John McCain. Well, I'm one of them. Well, he was a hero. No, he wasn't. I'm sorry, but I've heard too much about Cain. I've heard too much McCain. I've heard too much out of his own mouth. The man was not a hero. He was a backstabbing, lying son of a bitch. That's not a hero. Trump called him out. See, nobody else would. Nobody else would. Oh, but John McCain, he's always willing to compromise and walk across the aisle and shake hands and work with the others. They all loved it down. They all loved him down there. Oh, but did we forget that when he ran for president back in 2008, the media hated him? Now all of a sudden the media loves him. Oh, the media loved him because he didn't like Donald Trump. And now Hollywood is out there, you know, on the announcement for the Oscars or whatever, the Emmys, I don't know, some sort of stupid award. there's another red carpet event that happened out there, and they're giving McCain, the leftist Hollywood elite, are giving McCain a tribute. Now, if there isn't anything more phony than that, I don't know what is. You're going to tell me that all of a sudden, now that the man is dead, and I love when people say, well, you don't speak ill of the dead. Bullshit, we speak ill of the dead all the time because we tell the truth of history about them. Of course we do. Well, they can't defend themselves. Well, so what? Since when are you never supposed to tell the truth about a dead person? Oh, I guess when it's a swamp, when they're a swamp monster, you're supposed to like only remember the good stuff or the things that you like about them. That's it. That's all you get. All the wonderful thing. Hey, give me a break. Now, it may be controversial to some people. I don't care. I do not consider John McCain to be a hero, an American hero. He's an American anti-hero. Now, I'm going to tell the truth about him. I told the truth about him when he's alive. I'll tell the truth about him when he's dead. I don't care. The truth is the truth. The truth doesn't care either. And so these people are trying every political weapon that they have. They're trying to magnify those weapons, and none of them seem to be working. But they can overwhelm. Now, maybe their political weapons won't work individually, but they can overwhelm the president, because Donald Trump, after all, is still only a human being. And there's still, even though he's a workhorse, there's still only so much he can do in a day. But I'm telling you, I think he's learned a few tricks or two, political tricks or two, while he's been down there in D.C. I don't know how the guy doesn't, you know, they try to dump all this swamp muck on him, and none of it sticks. I don't know how he does it. It personally, if it were me, I'd probably get to the point, just wake up one morning and look at my wife, you know, if it was Melania, and say, what the F am I doing? This is crazy. They're going to drive me and my family insane. I quit. Let them have it. They want to destroy themselves, let them have it. But he's a lot tougher and a lot stronger than that, so... I can understand people getting frustrated, because I get frustrated just sitting, you know, I'm up here in New Hampshire. Can you imagine what it's like down there? I can, you know, just see it now. No, you can't. You do not want me down in D.C. Well, maybe you do. Maybe we need a hell of a lot more people like me and Trump down in D.C. and just totally obliterate the place. And clean it out and fully drain it and start over. I mean, because it is what we need. I don't have the temperament, though. I really don't. When it comes to these people, I really don't have the temperament. I could not, I mean, I would, well, I'd never, well, I'd never get invited to any parties. And that would be okay, because I'm not a social butterfly, so it wouldn't hurt my feelings. That's the other part, is that stuff like this doesn't hurt Donald Trump's feelings, because the left is all about touchy-feely stuff. Yeah, you folks know this is true. And if you're a leftist listening, you better pay attention, because you're going to figure it out sooner or later. You know, most rank-and-file leftists... you can turn on their reason center every once in a while. You can press that logic button in their head. And every once in a while, they'll see something and realize something. This is why they have the hashtag walk away campaign is still going pretty strong. Sometimes, you know, the rank and file leftists, sometimes they'll realize, hey, well, damn. I think he's right about that. That doesn't, you know, that doesn't make any sense for them to do this or do that. And you know it's all touchy-feely. It's all about feelings. And I keep telling people, feelings don't matter. Feelings don't count. I can't control your feelings. Nobody can. Is the other thing about which is the other thing? This new tactic. Now, this is a political tactic that has come down from high, folks. This is not something that has worked its way from the bottom up. This is something that's worked its trickle down. This is something that has worked its way down. And when you fully understand that it's trickle down and not trickle up, you have the ability to understand it better and to counter it. And that's all this touchy feeling, I need a safe space kind of crap. Really, a safe space from what? Are you that sensitive? Your feelings are that easily hurt? And your feelings can be hurt by the truth? Honestly? Well, this stuff happens because that's the way it's taught. That's the way these people are trained. Now, I've told you time and time again that the human brain, especially the emotional center, is not fully developed in humans until you're about 24 or 25 years old. Scientists and medicine has proven this. The human brain it takes 24 to 25 years for the human brain to fully develop. When do we instill and teach our young people? By the time most of them graduate and get a bachelor's or even a master's degree, they're still not 25 years old. All of that stuff has been indoctrinated on an emotional level to them. College used to be about logic and knowledge and truth and fact. Now it's all about emotion. That's also, and when you talk to somebody, when you talk to a millennial or Gen Z, they're talking to you from an emotional standpoint. No, even the conservative ones. I don't care. They're all emotional. And they haven't learned, because they're not fully developed, they haven't learned how to fully control those emotions. So they go off the rails. You can't hurt my feelings. I need a safe space. Really, buck up, Chuck. The world is a harsh place, and when you're going to be here after you're 25, so you better learn how to start dealing with it now. Well, the only place that it seems that people care in this country that people care about somebody else's feelings is when you find yourself surrounded by a bunch of people who think like you do in Washington, D.C., because everywhere else in the country, you know, business doesn't give a damn about your feelings. Never forget the time that I worked for an insurance company. Health insurance. This, and she wasn't all that pretty, but this little thing gets hired right out of college, the age of 22, thinking that she was wonderful and so smart and was underpaid. No work experience whatsoever. I'm worth this, and I'm worth that, and they won't give that to me. And she was constantly getting her feelings hurt. And I just looked at her one day and I said, look, you don't know anything yet, so the best thing you can do is keep your mouth shut and learn. What you think you learned in college is not what the reality of the world is. Definitely not at this company. And if you keep acting the way you're acting now, you're not going to make it here. And she was like, well, this is not fair. I said, honey, I'll never forget this conversation. She said, this is not fair. I said, honey, life isn't fair. But you know what? That's not what she learned in college. She learned in college that things should be fair and could be fair. No. Life isn't fair. It was never meant to be fair. It's never gonna be fair. But if your reaction to thinking something is unfair toward you is to cry and to lash out, you've got a real problem. Well, let me tell you, this is the whole millennial generation. And the problem is with the millennials is that they took all this emotional bullshit past the age of 25. And now the leading edge of them is 38. And if you want to see, I can't even imagine what midlife crises are going to be like for millennials. You know, usually, you know, a man goes through a midlife crisis in his 40s. He hits 40 or 45. He goes through a midlife. What do they do? You know, real men, they go out and buy a sports car or try to bed down a 20-something-year-old girl. You know, make them feel young and strong and virile again, right? And women, you know, women, they tend to, well, they have a midlife crisis, and they go and they change their hair, and they get their hair color, they get their nails did, and, you know, they go out to the clubs or the bars with their friends and get the eyes of the young men, and it makes them feel young and beautiful again. I can't imagine what a touchy-feely millennial is going to do when they hit a midlife crisis. Can you imagine? I mean, let that sink in. They're almost there. I know some of you are saying, but Rod, they're having a midlife crisis now. That's all they've ever had. Yeah, but we always know that when the time comes, you know, whatever is going on in your life, we've seen all the movies, we've seen all the studies, we've seen, you know, it's probably seen a lot of it in real life. And hell, some of you may have gone through your own midlife crisis. Now, can you imagine having that type of feeling? Because midlife crisis is all about feeling. Can you imagine having that feeling multiplied 100 times? Yeah, total disaster.
You're listening to The Rod Eccles Show, the coolest, most politically incorrect, conservative black man on the planet.
We've all heard of male enhancement, but now there's an expert on true male enhancement in the areas that really count. In Herb Ellis's book, Husband 2.0, Real Male Enhancement, you'll find answers to questions like, why doesn't she want to have sex? A quick start, quick results workout guide, plus what you can do as a side hustle to make money now. With all the great tips in this book, every man can benefit. Get the book, Husband 2.0, Real Male Enhancement, on Amazon.com.
It started with a knock, but it wouldn't end there. What happens in the story next, many wouldn't understand, and most wouldn't believe. 5+2=Perfection by Samuel Rosette Jr. is a must-read. The scriptures within are reminders of the ancient past, and yet intriguingly infuses with texts which stand on the edge of the stage of relevancy. Available online at Westbow Press, Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, and SamuelRosetteJr.com.
This holiday season, help Soldiers for Stockings improve the morale and welfare of members of our armed forces deployed overseas. Now through November 20th, there is so much work to be done, and you can help in many ways. Download the stocking pattern from stockingsforsoldiers.org and start sewing today. Volunteer to help decorate and assemble stockings. Donate Christmas candies, snacks, nuts, chips, drink mixes, DVDs, books, magazines, lip balm, toiletries, and other items needed to fill the stockings. Or help make packets of snowman soup, hot chocolate to send along with the stockings. For more information, patterns, and a list of items needed, visit stockingsforsoldiers.org. This holiday season, help send our troops a touch of home. For many, it's all they will receive. All stockings need to be completed by November 20th. So get started today at stockingsforsoldiers.org. That's stockingsforsoldiers.org. Stockings for Soldiers, sending stockings filled with joy to our soldiers in harm's way for the 9th consecutive year.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-471-9742. That's 800-471-9742. Again, 800-471-9742.
Do you need a car? Been shopping only to be turned down because of bad credit, low credit, no credit, bankruptcy, or divorce? Guess what? Today's your lucky day, because now you can buy a car, truck, or SUV, just about any vehicle. It's true. Bad credit? Doesn't matter. No credit? Doesn't matter. Bankruptcy or divorce? It just doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, your job is your ticket to your new vehicle. We're Auto Credit Express, and we've helped thousands of people just like you. Antonio H. told us, great company, got me connected, and the day I went in, I drove off in the car I wanted. 100% worth your time. Need a car? Get started now and drive off as early as today. Just go to 7ignoremyscore.com right now. That's www.7ignoremyscore.com. Auto financing the easy way. 7ignoremyscore.com. Get started today. Auto financing the easy way.
The Hot Rod Line, the call-in number is 603-499-7325. Again, that's 603-499-7325, should you wish to utilize it. It's a number that actually, it's a toll-free, by the way. It's a number that works. And it comes directly to the studio here. And directly feeds into the pewter, which then everybody else out there can hear you ask your question or hear you make your comment or your observation. And there are a lot of people that listen. But understand that I don't want to scare anybody off. But, because in this day and age, it's called podcasting. And every day after this live broadcast concludes, we do a little bit of editing and then post it as a podcast so everybody can hear it from, 10 years from now. You can come back and listen to what you used to sound like in 10 years. Anybody ever notice that your voice changes as you age? Well, those of us who talk more, who utilize our voice more. Now, I'm actually, believe it or not, I know it's hard to believe, and there are a lot of friends that I have that have known me for a long time that are surprised that I can do a talk show for 3 hours, because I'm really not all that talkative. Well, I like to listen and observe. In a way, I guess you could say I'm a people watcher and a people listener. Oh, don't get me wrong. Somebody hits a hot button on me, I'm very active and very talkative about it. But I ask a lot of questions, but I'm not the center of attention usually. I'm always asking questions. And I'm always listening. I find people fascinating. They really are. A lot of times. Which is really kind of, I'm a strange kind of dude. I'm not really a people person. Now, I don't go out of my way to hurt people's feelings. I don't. I'm really a nice guy. But there are some cases when a person's feelings get hurt, I don't feel anything for them. I'm like, well, hey, that's just the way it is. It's really kind of... Well, I don't know. Some people say that I'm a little odd. Well, maybe. That might be. I'm not going to deny that. I really was a weird kid, though. I'm not going to lie about that. I sometimes go down memory lane
some of the weird, and I know a lot of people say, well, I used to do weird things too. Well, maybe we were all weird kids, but I was kind of a weird kid. Now, I was never one of the outcasts or the dweebs or anything. I was always pretty popular, but I was still kind of odd. Not going to lie. I might still be odd to a lot of people. That's okay. I really kind of like who I am. I'm comfortable in my own skin, as it were. And that's because that's all due to my parents. You know, my parents used to, by teaching me and by word and deed, you lead by example type of thing. My parents did that. I got my work ethic from my father. That man was a workhorse. And I did get my caring aspect so much as it is from my mother. But my mother, you didn't mess with her, man. You know, she's from the inner city. You get on her bad side and she's ready to... my mother could fight, let me tell you. And she never backed down either. She wasn't afraid of anyone. She taught me the same thing. She says, you don't be afraid of anyone. Never. You don't run from anyone. I remember that. Oh, there were a number of times when I was a real young kid, like 6, 7, 8 years old, first, second, third grade. That got instilled in me hard. You don't run from anyone. You can't be afraid of anyone, because as soon as they see that you're afraid of them, they will never leave you alone. And I learned that lesson the hard way. Quick little personal story. Because of my father being in the military, we were all over the place. And I ended up in an inner city school, not once, not twice, but 3 times, called Public School Number 31 in Buffalo, New York. First grade, fourth grade, and eighth grade. First grade is a dream. I don't remember much about it. Fourth grade, different story. I was like this little puppy. Because I didn't grow up in inner city downtown Buffalo in the ghetto. Well, that's where my grandparents lived. So we often stayed with my mother's parents when my dad was in the midst of changing stations. And I spent a good amount of time in my fourth grade year in public school number 31. And I was this little scared puppy. And my mother kept pounding into my head, don't be afraid of anyone. Don't be afraid. You don't back down. You don't run. And I used to run from people. People would try to bully me, but I'd never stick around to be bullied. You see in the movies where the kid just stands there and takes the punishment. Oh, hell no, I got the hell out of there. And my mother caught me one day and says, don't you ever do that again. Don't run. Now, by the time I ended up back there 4 years later in eighth grade, a lot of those same people that I was in the class with or in the grade with in fourth grade, they're now in eighth grade with me. Well, they got a different version of me at that point. No, I didn't run, and I didn't back down. I had to beat some ass. And I did. And within the first week of me being back, all those wonderful people that thought that they could extort me, they could, bully me, they could chase me, all nah, different person. And you know what? My mother was right. Even the bully, you stand up to the bully, they'll leave you alone. Because they're looking for easy targets, easy pickings. So, again, parents teaching their kids and not giving up on the lesson. My mother never gave up on that tough stance lesson. And it's probably so bad today that sometimes now my mom says, well, you got to go a little bit lighter sometimes, son. I'm like, that's not what you taught me. So maybe she taught me too well. Unfortunately, today's kids don't get that lesson. No, instead they get, oh, honey, did they hurt your feelings? It's just terrible. Ask a teacher. Even if it's a leftist teacher, which is really surprising. Ask a leftist teacher. You're like, kid isn't doing well in school. What do the parents do? Well, most of the parents come in and blame me. Well, because they don't want to hurt their little Johnny or little Susie's feelings, do they? They don't want to tell little Johnny or little Susie, oh, you're stupid. You need some extra help. No, it's, you don't know how to do your job and teach my kid. And I don't understand why teachers have to deal with liberal parents. How the hell is it a teacher, after doing that, is going to stay liberal? I have no idea how that works. If I were a liberal teacher and I had to go through some of the stuff I've heard some of my teacher friends go through, and my sister too, I'd be a conservative so damn hard and so damn fast, it'd be ridiculous. It'd make your head spin. Because that's the only way to get through to some of these parents. You can't get through to some of the parents by being a fellow touchy-feely person. You got to look at the parent and say, look, it's not my fault. I got 30 kids in my classroom. Little Johnny needs some extra help that he's obviously not getting at home. Why? Well, that might hurt the parents' feelings, but oh well. I guess I just can't win. It's a good thing I'm not a teacher. A lot of professions I'm in this day and age, I'm not suited for temperament-wise. Because I wouldn't take all this crap that some people take. And it's just absolutely it's insane. Absolutely insane. Deep State. Deep State is unmasked. Have you seen this yet? The State Department on hidden cam. Now, I don't know, this guy is going to get himself in some serious trouble. Yeah, a Project Veritas did another undercover cam sting, if you will. And he caught a number of State Department. Now, if you wonder why we keep saying drain the swamp, because Donald Trump can't, we got to send people there to help him because he can't do it himself. Here, the State Department on hidden cam, State Department employee saying, resist everything. Or I have nothing to lose but to by resisting everything. I still can't get an answer from anybody on the left. What exactly are you resisting? You don't like Donald Trump's personality. Oh, got it. But what has that got to do with everything else that's going on? What are you resisting? They can't tell you. I haven't gotten an answer yet from a single leftist resistor. What are you resisting? It's an open question. Anytime any of you can answer the question honestly, if you can answer it honestly, then let me hear the answer. Because not a single, and I ask all of you leftists, well, what exactly are you resisting? Not a single damn one of you has ever given me an answer. Well, he's not presidential. That's not an answer because you don't even know what being presidential really is. So they've got the people in the State Department. The State Department. Federal employees for the State Department resist everything, every level. F shit up. And that's what they've been trying to do. Democratic Socialists of America, or now that I guess they've got a real designation, the DSA. Did you know this? Now, I realize like people like Beto and Ocasio-Cortez call themselves Democratic Socialists, but did you know that they're a real organization now? I'm not talking about the American Communist Party. I mean, we've known about them. I'm not talking about the Green Party, which is basically an arm of the Communist Party, American Communist Party. We understand them. We've seen them. But we thought that this democratic socialist thing was a fairly new idea. Well, if it's new, man, they've formed a group pretty damn fast. Democratic Socialists of America, the DSA, are embedded in federal government positions, actively resisting Trump. Stuart Carafa, K-A-R-A-F-F-A, does work for the DSA while on the taxpayer's dime. He even admits it on camera. Well, it's a hidden cam. Well, I'm careful about it. I don't leave a paper trail. I have nothing to lose. It's impossible to fire federal employees. Folks, this is their mentality. I have told you this before, that the reason why government employees treat their fellow American citizens, their constituency, so poorly is because they have no fear of being censured or fired. And that's even at a state level. It's why even when you complain about the lack of service that you get, nothing ever changes when it comes to government services. I've talked about that. You know, you go into your town hall or your city hall, and you got there's an office, and there are 15 desks there. I don't know why there's so many desks, because there's never anybody at them. But the ones that are at their desk, they notice you're there. Do they say anything? No, they never say anything. They just go back to doing whatever they're doing. Don't tell somebody else who could help you. They completely ignore you. And you stand there for 5-10 minutes, and then finally somebody comes from behind a row of filing cabinets that you can't see beyond. And they ask you, can I help you? As if you're disturbing them. I can't tell you how many. Now, this really happened a lot in the state of New York when I lived there. But it even happens here in New Hampshire. And, of course, if you go to somebody and complain to them, they don't even pay attention to your complaint. You go, well, you know, people are busy here. We try to do our best to get to you as quickly as possible. No, you don't. But they don't change anything because they have no fear of being fired. And now you've got somebody in the State Department on camera admitting just that. Ethics officer fails to recognize breach on ethics forms. Somebody just rubber stamped it and it goes forward. Well, what good is having an ethics officer if they're unethical too? So evidently yesterday, Project Veritas released the first installment of an undercover video investigation series unmasking the deep state. The video features a State Department employee, Stuart Carafa, engaged in radical socialist party activity on the taxpayer's dime while advocating for resistance to official government policies. In addition to being a State Department employee, Stuart Carafa is also a ranking member of the Metro D.C. Democratic Socialist of America. Metro D.C. DSA is a socialist group that works to advance progressive causes in the metropolitan D.C. area. So we have proof now that we have government employees actively working against their boss, the president, and actively working against the American people. Now, I'm sorry, but when people find out about this, unless you're a fellow DSA person, why the hell would you vote for any Democrat? Because they're not going to change this. In fact, they're going to install more people like this if you give them a chance. Why the hell would you vote for a single Democrat? Rod, didn't you say that you're going to vote for a Democrat in your state? Well, yes. Again, you have to vote for the person. And just because they're Republican doesn't mean that they're going to do a good job for you and have your best interests in heart as a conservative. John McCain, anyone? Just as an example, It's rare, but on occasion you will find a Democrat who probably shouldn't be a Democrat. They probably should be a Republican because they're that conservative. But let me tell you, for the most part, they're on the national side. I don't know every single candidate, but I haven't seen a candidate yet that's a Democrat that would be better than the Republican that they're running against. Haven't seen it. Now, when I say national, I know all politics is local, and I know I cannot vote, you know, in Texas 5th District because I don't live there. But it's a national position, even though it's elected locally. Because they're the ones that are going to come in and help institute policy. They're the ones that are going to bring in a bunch of their own people, you know, their fellow little swamp rats. You know, they're not swamp monsters yet. They bring in swamp rats, and then those rats, if they stay around long enough, they morph into monsters. So they bring in their fellow little swamp rats, like this Stuart Carafa. He's a swamp rat. You know, anybody who does, and look, you know, people are complaining, well, Donald Trump is always doing this. Is he working on his business on the people's dime? Well, two things with that. One, no, he's not. But two, remember, his salary is only a dollar. No, it's not. Yeah, really, it is. He donates all of it, his salary. He doesn't keep it. Except I think he has to keep a dollar. Consideration. Now, if you're an insurance person, you know exactly what the term consideration is. Let me give you an example. You go and buy an auto policy. You get the policy in hand. You know, the insurance agent says, well, thanks for being our client or our customer, and you're going to get, you know, superb service. So you take the insurance policy and you walk out the door. And then you get in your car and somebody hits you. And you go back into the insurance agent and say, well, somebody just hit me. Here's my insurance policy. And they look it up and they say, sorry, you're not covered. And you say, well, I just got the policy. You say, we know. We can see that. But you failed to give us consideration, thereby binding and legalizing your policy. You say, what are you talking about? And he just looks at you and said, all you really had to do was give me a dollar today. And you would be covered. But since you didn't, this policy is not legal nor binding. That's the law, by the way. There must be consideration or money exchange, even if it's just a dollar. So when it comes to working for the federal government or any government, I do believe the law states that you must be paid a salary. That's why he couldn't just say, he couldn't brush aside the salary and say, I don't want it. The president could not do that. But he can donate his salary if he wants after he gets it. But in any event, I still think in order for him to be legal, he still has to maintain and keep a dollar. So they want to tax a dollar, I guess. I mean, I don't. If you donate all, what was it, the president get $400,000? So if you donate $400,000, do you get taxed on $400,000? You write it all off. So probably not. You know, I'm not a tax attorney or an accountant, but it would seem to me that you'd be paying very little. So he probably can only give away $399,999 technically. Maybe he needs a dollar to pay taxes. I don't know. But in any case, he couldn't just say, I don't want to get paid. That would not be legal, I do believe. There was, you know, it was a big thing about that. And, you know, Trump just set it aside and said, you know what, I'll just donate. And he did. So far, he's donated just about every dime of his presidential salary. He hasn't really taken a salary. And he's still paying for everything else out of, you know, that the president's supposed to pay for out of his own pocket. He's still paying for everything that he's supposed to pay for out of his own pocket. The advantages of being a multi-billion. Yeah, I still think that everybody, even Forbes, I still think they underestimate his wealth. And I think even though Donald Trump is a braggart, he is, I think he likes being underestimated. Because a lot of people are saying, I bet you he's not worth nearly as much as he claims. I bet you he's worth more than what he claims. And I bet you he's got a lot more cash than what he claims. Not in an illegal sense. I'm sure all of it's paid for, all of it's above board, and all of it's legal. But he doesn't have to tell people. You know, if you think he's worth, you know, $3 billion or $4 billion, great. But he's probably happy with that. You know, which is why he so confidently says, oh, yeah, Donald Trump's only worth like $1.5 billion. And he laughs about it. He's probably worth $6 to $10 billion. That's why he's laughing at the $1.5 billion number. You know, they did the same thing with Mark Cuban. Does anybody remember that back in the day? You know, Forbes was saying, oh, yeah, Mark Cuban's worth about $500 million, you know, $500 million. And he laughed at him. Well, come to find out a couple of years later, he was worth a few billion dollars. You know, a lot of rich people don't go and brag about how much they're worth. They really don't. Any case, take a break. Be right back. Don't go anywhere.
I'm not Rod Eccles, and I approve this message.